It is Locked On Jazz for the 20th of August. The Jazz just brilliant in game two, blow out the Nuggets and even the series. We'll break it down, where it stands, what's sustainable, what's not, what we learned, and more as we give you a fun edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and hopefully making it way better to be a Jazz fan, which would be hard to do after their performance yesterday. The Jazz, just brilliant. Third quarter was near perfection, and the Jazz blow out the Nuggets and win it 124-105. I've rewatched the first three quarters because the fourth quarter didn't matter. And there's a lot of different aspects to this. The biggest one I would tell you is the series is not over. But there are, you know, I have two different ways I kind of feel on this one. One I would tell you is that, you know, the Jazz are now 1-4 against the Nuggets this year. Like, I think that's, like, we got to remember that. Like, you just don't get caught in the pure recency bias of everything that's taking place. The other one I would say, you know, the Nuggets this year, when they don't have Gary Harris and they don't have Will Barton, are a minus 3.5 per 100 possessions. So, you know, they're missing main guys. So were we, right? Bogdanovich and Conley. But they were missing some main guys that impact who they are as a team. And there is a chance that we're taking advantage of that to some extent here. So there's a lot of different aspects, a lot of different angles, and I'm going to dive into them. It's going to be a little bit of a scattered show. I just kind of have running notes from rewatching, not necessarily chronologically. But I wanted to walk through the ball game with you just from kind of the things that I saw in the game. The third quarter was brilliance. Offensive perfection. How good were we in that quarter? Well, the if this is accurate, and I sometimes think these things can be a little screwy, but I pulled our advanced metrics for just the third quarter. The offensive rating for for Royce O'Neal, Rudy Gobert, Donovan Mitchell was more than 2 points of possession. They had us at, for the quarter, and this doesn't seem to be quite right, but NBA.com had us at close to 2 points per possession for the entire third quarter. I mean, that is brilliance. And what we saw in the first half of that game was Denver came out and changed the way they were playing, and the Jazz were perfectly prepared for it. I don't know if they just guessed right, but they were when Denver started bringing two guys to the ball, it was not problematic in any way, shape, or form to the Utah Jazz. And they spaced it, and they moved it, and they jumped up, and they got off of it, and they got it to the next guy. And on Twitter today, at Locked On Sports, if you don't already follow me, I'm getting near 60,000, so if you could tell like 223 people to follow me so I can get to 60,000, that'd be cool. I don't know why I care about that, but it'd just be cool. If you were to take... where was I before? My selfish plug. I have no idea where I was before my selfish plug. Oh, yeah, moving the basketball. So the Jazz just moved it great. And on Twitter, I'll put up some shots to it. There was one sequence to the game that I thought was more emblematic than anything else. And it was in the third quarter. So what the Nuggets were doing is when the Jazz would try to get a switch on to Donovan Mitchell off Torrey Craig, so Michael Porter Jr. or someone, Torrey Craig would like sag into the lane and not really leave Donovan. It was kind of actually, I thought it was pretty bad defense actually. It was actually kind of a little bit of this and a little bit of that. Like he wouldn't quite go all the way over, but he would stay hovering close enough to restrict his driving lanes. But he also would leave like sometimes just far enough so that Royce O'Neal was open for three. So, you know, they weren't really trying, they were trying not to let Donovan go to work. And so Donovan gets switched onto Michael Porter Jr. or Monty Morris or whoever it was. And Craig wouldn't really leave. And the Jazz were taking advantage of it. But then Quinn ran a three-play sequence in the third quarter that kind of busted the game open that, to me, was like the ultimate sign of like, hey, we got you. And even Ron Boone on the broadcast was like, oh, they busted him. Like, and they did. And so what the sequence was the first time Donovan comes off Michael Porter Jr. switch, and they end up making the switch, and Donovan gets off it, and we get a pretty good look. The next time, Rudy comes up into the play. So now there's three people involved. Donovan is interchanging with the guard to get the switch, and then Rudy is quickly thereafter setting a pick on the new defender of Donovan. So Donovan rises and fires and hits some threes out of that. I'm giving you a very kind of rudimentary rundown of this, and I'll try to do a better job on Twitter. The other one was that Rudy came up once and set a back pick on Torrey Craig so that Donovan runs off Ingles. Porter Jr. switches on to Mitchell. Craig is now hovering close again. Rudy sets the back pick on Craig. Ingles flares out now off that pick, is wide open for a three. To me, this sequence, which I'm not sure I've described very well, you've got the Jazz running this switch, and Denver's answer to it is kind of, well, we'll sort of switch, but not really switch. So then the Jazz spaced perfectly, and they got some threes off. That's just bad defense. You're supposed to get back in time. They just couldn't. Two, then the Jazz start running Rudy into the mix so that you switch Jamal Murray on to Donovan, and then the pick comes, and now it's just a pick and roll with Jokic, and you've cleared Craig out of the area because he's on another guy, and Jokic is dropping back, and so now Donovan's rising and firing into a three, but he's running off the pick and roll guarded by Jamal Murray instead of being guarded by Torrey Craig. And then part three of it is you actually set the pick on Craig, who's switched on to Ingles, and he doesn't want to leave Donovan, so he's a little reluctant to go fight through that pick, and Joe Ingles is wide open for three. And it all happened in the middle of the third quarter, and it's what took the game from like boom to boom, but it just showed how once the Jazz... Quinn Snyder runs so many plays and has so many answers, but once they know what you're doing, he has an answer for it. And this has been true in every playoff series except for when they play the Houston Rockets, who just switch. And even then, he's had some answers for it, but just switching forces you into just isolation, and it's not great. There's not a lot from a coaching standpoint that you can do to a team that just switches everything and says, here's isolation. You can go post them up, which we don't do. That's just fundamentally who we're not. You can drive and kick, which is a lot of what we've done. They ran some pick and roll against the isolation where you slipped it. So you tried to slip it before the switch. That was probably the most effective and frankly kind of changed the rules in the league. And Quinn busted Houston for a game and we got a win out of it. But in the other playoff series we've had against the Clippers and the Thunder and now against Denver, we're watching as a team commits to how they're going to play. Quinn has an answer for it. And the Jazz execute it. Now, I thought rewatching the game, before anyone gets too cocky and too excited, I truly just thought Denver was awful. I mean, I'm not trying to beat them up. Like, I'm actually out of respect to Denver, I'm saying this. Like, I'm watching them play last. They weren't good. They're not going to be that bad again. Their defensive effort was colossally bad. And so, the Jazz energy from the opening tip was outstanding. They just came out from the very, very beginning with great effort, and maybe it's as simple as the Jazz punch first. But the game was 42-42. Two-play sequence here where enormous credit. I thought Jordan Clarkson's energy, I mean, he made a ton of shots, but I thought Jordan Clarkson's energy was through the roof. And there's a two-play sequence that I thought was really, really important in this ball game, and I think Jordan Clarkson deserves a lot of credit to it. And... you know, maybe, you know, games are interesting. You have a butterfly effect, and maybe you're going to get there anyway. But so the Jazz lead at 46-42. It was tied. Clarkson is tied. We're trailing 42-39. Clarkson hits a three to tie it at 42. He misses the next one down. And Donovan makes a shot to make it 44-40. We're up by two. Murray misses. Rudy gets a nice layup from Joe Ingles' assist on a play where Denver's kind of, this is where Denver just wasn't very good. Like, I'll explain that in a second. Let me just stay on this thought. I know I told you it's going to be scattered. This is what happens if I don't like totally organize my thoughts. Sorry. And then there's the sequence where they have six opportunities and they don't score. Jordan Clarkson is in the middle of all of that. And making just battling and forcing misses and doing a ton of stuff there. It's 46-42 timeout. We go back down. We run a nice play. Gobert misses. Nice block by Grant. Jokic is bringing the ball up the floor, and from behind, Clarkson runs him down, knocks it away. We go fast break the other way, and Rudy dunks plus one. And now all of a sudden, it's 49-42. So it's 46-42. Clarkson makes a bunch of plays, and Rudy does on the offensive glass or defensive glass to prevent them from scoring, which would have made it 46-44. We miss. Jokic is about to go down and tie it, you know, would have been tying it at 46. Instead, from 46-42, the steal by Clarkson, we go up 49-42. And we just started playing with momentum and rolling from that point on. I'll get into the Denver defense on Ingles and how it just wasn't much of anything and why the Jazz, why it worked so well for the Jazz. Today's show is brought to you by InterCap Lending. That's Steve Carter and my buddies over at InterCap. They do great work. InterCap's just blowing up. Why? Because they get deals done. See, the essence of when you're in the lending business is people want to work with you if you can get deals done. They started with a few branches. By last year, they were at 15. Now they keep growing. They came to Utah in 2016 when Josh Romney brought one of the largest independent mortgage companies into Utah. They're different. They're hyper-responsive. They embrace change. They care about the borrower experience because they're a direct issuer. What does direct issuer mean? I did my loan with InterCap. InterCap still has it today. My relationship is still with InterCap. They haven't sold it off to a bunch of people. This means that they're able to do things that maybe some other people can't do under that circumstance. So therefore, you end up with this great customer service experience and you get them to get loans closed. And so people want to use, agents want to use InterCap because the only way agents get paid is if deals get done. The InterCap Lending, 385-800-8528. That is Steve Carter. He is our personal loan officer. He's who did my loan. He's done a ton of other locked on people. He's just amazing. Call him at 385-800-8528. InterCap Lending, NMLS number 190465. For more information, visit intercaplending.com. Again, Steve Carter, 385-800-8528. Today's show is brought to you by Rock Auto. Rock Auto is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to rockauto.com to shop for auto and body parts for hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from whether it's new carpet to motor stuff to tail lamps to brake parts to engine control modules. Their catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. When you go to a chain store, they have different prices for professionals, different prices for do-it-yourselfers. You're stuck to what they have in their catalog, what they have on their shelves. Not at rockauto.com. With their unique and remarkably easy to navigate, almost old-school website, you quickly see all the parts that are there for your vehicle, choose the brand specifications and prices you prefer, and best of all, the prices at Rock Auto are reliably low and same for professionals as they are for do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much on the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now, see all the parts available for your car or truck, and when you're checking out, make sure you write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us section. That's right, write Locked On in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Amazingly low prices, reliably low prices, amazing selection for all the parts your car will ever need. It's rockauto.com. So Denver came out against Joe Ingles, who handled a good deal the other night, and decided to trap, but soft trap to get the ball out of his hands. It was not an impactful trap. Like, there's space in it. Joe's able to kind of go get off the ball without a lot of restriction. And then the Jazz just start swinging it. Then the Jazz just do what the Jazz do, which is move the ball and get open looks. And we're shooting it lights out. We're not going to have that kind of a shooting game again. Frankly, they're not either, which is equally as important. And I can't imagine, like, I'm watching a game trying to guess what the adjustments are going to be. And we kind of guessed right on Denver on the show last week or before the game. I'll get into it more tomorrow. I think they're gonna have to be more aggressive if they're gonna trap and play. They're a little bit caught between a rock and a hard place here, and that is They're going to have to come out and trap aggressively and make the Jazz at least retreat a little. Here's what gets interesting about this series. Denver made an adjustment after winning game one, which makes sense. Like, Donovan dropped 57. Mike Malone's a good coach. Like, this, I'm not, this, but this is a fact. So they made an adjustment. They came out and they played us differently. They kind of doubled Donovan every now and then. They pseudo-switched. They sent two guys to Ingles, and Ingles got off the ball beautifully, and Royce O'Neal then ended up with a career-high assist. And it didn't work. Like, it didn't work. The Jazz shot really well. They had an offensive rating last night of a 141. It's our best offensive performance, I'm certain, ever in playoff history, and our best offensive performance of the season. We shot 50% of our shots from three and only 10% of our shots as mid-range shots. We did take 15 floaters, but that's, you know, it's not great, but we only took 22 shots in the mid range in non-restricted area twos, whereas Denver took like a million non-restricted area twos. I'll get to that in a second. So they made this adjustment and we did have a really good shooting game, like kind of maybe a little bit of an unnatural shooting game, but we busted their adjustment off a win. So I don't know what they do. Do they go back and just say, let Donovan get his? And then you're basically telling your guys, hey, they're going to force a bunch of switches and you're going to have to deal with it. And that's not going to make anyone particularly happy, right? That's not something that is going to make their players, you know, they're not going to be totally fired up for that experience. So I'm not quite sure what's going to happen. Utah threw 300 passes in yesterday's game. I mean, we're just moving it, 35 kickouts. Ran 100 pick and rolls. We averaged about 1.4 points per pick and roll, about the same we averaged on drive. I mean, we were great. The third quarter was just perfect offense. There's no other way. The Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert pick and roll was unbelievable. But the Ingles Gobert pick and roll was like perfect. I don't think they didn't get many stops on that at any point. And Ingles would come on the pick and roll. They'd throw like a soft, he'd come off. Jokic would be tentative with him. Ingles would go into the lane. Murray would be trailing. But there was no restriction. There was no impact on Ingles in any way, shape, or form. And then they would bring the third guy off the corner. And yet still Ingles was finding Gobert to finish. And then the third guy's out the corner. So if Ingles wants to, he rotates it out to that corner, to the weak side corner. The pick and roll between Murray and Jokic, which was the thing that destroyed us in game number one. They ran it 30 times in game one. They only ran it 15 times, and it was not as successful. But you know what? If you go back to game one, and I did this actually after our last show. I don't think I ever got to this. They ran that pick and roll 30 times, but they'd only run it, I believe, 13 times in the first three quarters. So we, you know, in this level of like, hey, let's cool the Jets, like, have we won the series yet? Like, I be a little careful on. They ran the pick and roll between Murray and Jokic 13 times in the first three quarters in game one, and they only scored on four of the first 13. And then when it was go time, they ran it another 14 times, and they scored on 10 of the final 14 times they ran it. We never got to that point of this game. They ran it the 13 times. They scored on like three of them, exact same as they did the first game. We do not know that we've answered that pick and roll. I don't feel comfortable in any way saying that we've answered. In fact, of the matter is they're still scoring at about 1.2 points per possession. I don't think they can keep shooting like this. They're at 51.5% three-point shooting for the series. They're not that good a three-point shooting team. I do not believe that they can keep shooting like this. There's no chance, frankly. Like, that's the thing that would have me the most worried if I'm a Nugget fan, is that they're shooting 51.5% from three and the series is tied. And thank goodness for them that they had a 20 of 33 out-of-body experience in game one, or they'd be down 2-0. The other one that would worry me the most if I'm a Nugget fan is the number I gave you earlier. Gary Harris and Will Barton out. Will Barton's no longer in the bubble. Gary Harris has not played since they've entered the bubble. They're minus 3.5 per 100 possessions. They just might not be that good a team without two of their main seven guys, right? Like, that's just reality. This is two beat-up teams playing each other right now. It's a perfect matchup for each other. But if I'm Denver, those are my concerns. My concern is not that somehow the Utah Jazz have figured out Murray and Jokic. I just don't think we have at all. And the fact of the matter is that we just never had to. They ran it kind of haphazardly early in the ballgame, and not the way they do late in games with a great deal of zest to it. So, you know, again, I'm not certain on that one. Donovan against Torrey Craig, he had a better game than he has yet, so he's making progress there. And I would say, if I'm Denver, I'm concerned. I'm not sure what Denver does defensively next. But they'll do it with more zest and more juice. That will be an embarrassing film for them to watch. They really just were caught in between and non-impactful. And I think that there's no way that they'll do that again. If, you know, I think that, let's be perfectly clear that we respect them enough to understand they've won a hell of a lot of basketball games. They're not just going to come out with that kind of tepid defense again. I don't know if they changed things up and they just looked tentative doing it. They just didn't have any impact in what the Jazz were doing. And the Jazz were great, but we've always been great in that circumstance. Anytime somebody brings two people to the ball, the Jazz swing it, play the ball game the way they want, space the floor, and attack. And you could see it. In the first half of the game while I was calling it, I kept saying, like, they have us a bit kind of undone. We throw an extra pass. We get late in the shot clock. But you could feel that as the game went on, we were going to figure it out. And boy, did they ever in the third quarter. I mean, just remarkable. A bunch of random page worth of notes that I will get to here in a really rapid fire collection of thoughts. Notes from watching the game, so you better have your ADD glasses on here in just a second. Today's show is brought to you by some really good people over at SOS Support. Jason started the company 17 years ago. Scott works along with him. SOS Support is your IT help. Not just like one-off IT help. So if you think about if you're building a company, you know, if you're 10 to 100 employees, probably 40 to 50, at some point you need HR help. Like Locked On, we now have HR help. Like we use a company out at you know, that does our HR for us because we don't have the wherewithal to be able to do that. We don't have the manpower and I don't want my partner. I'm not doing it because I suck at it. And I don't want my partner doing it because I got other things we need him to do. So what do? You go and grab an HR and they come and outsource it. Well, you can do the same thing with your IT because to get a really good IT person, you're paying six digits. So instead, Jason and Scott are going to come in and they are going to be your outsourced small business IT company from 5 to 100 employees. They're your cybersecurity. They're your day-to-day, not just like a one-time fix here. They're a whole partner. Value-centric mindset. Retention rate is through the roof. They came to Utah and started in 2004. And you really have got to do this now because, frankly, if you're starting to grow an e-commerce or any of those kind of things, banks have to start the process to make sure you're secure. Financial institutions are requiring companies to have all the security in your data. And you've got to make those. You cannot be playing that game from behind, right? That's double teaming and leaving a guy wide open for three for your cybersecurity. That is bad. So call Scott at 801-563-9700. That's 801-563-9700. No obligation IT assessment. Include a PCI assessment there for you, whether your doctor's office, live manufacturing, molding house, steel fabrication, high-tech manufacturing, dental offices, law offices, accounting firms, constructions, energy firms, or a good example is KT Tape. It's one of their best clients. They've had a great relationship with KT Tape, been with them as KT Tape has risen from a small little Utah County company into a worldwide product. They are the whole partner there for them. Go give the guys a call at 801-563-9700. That's 801-563-9700. We want to support our local restaurants and support our keep everybody busy, but sometimes we don't want to go out for dinner. Well, DoorDash is there. You want Chinese pizza? Your cravings, Froyo, whatever it might be, DoorDash is there for you. Thousands of restaurants open for delivery on DoorDash that need your patronage now more than ever. You've counted on restaurants. Now they're counting on you. And while the dining rooms may be closed or if they're open, but you want to do delivery outside or have a nice picnic, DoorDash is here for you. The DoorDash app that brings you food for your craving right now, right to your door. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be left outside your door with new contactless delivery drop-off setting. With over 300,000 partners, we can do everything from our great local restaurants to Chipotle or the Cheesecake Factory. Many of your favorite local restaurants are open for delivery, so just get the DoorDash app and select your favorite local restaurant, and the food will be left right at your door with contactless delivery. So go to DoorDash, download the app, get $5 off and zero delivery fees of your first order of $15 or more. When you download the app, go enter in Locked On NBA. That's Locked On NBA. $5 off and zero delivery fees on your first order. Don't forget the code's Locked On NBA for $5 off with DoorDash. All right, let's look at some of the random notes. How about Juwan Morgan opening the game with just busting out a corner three? Juwan Morgan was really good again. Defensively filling space, rotating well, playing aggressively. His 14 minutes were just solid. Really solid. Really a tip of the hat to the coaching staff to understand him and know what he could do. And then also tip of the hat to Juwan Morgan for the about 5 or 8 possessions he guarded Jokic to open up the third quarter, which was a gutsy move by the Jazz. Jokic gets uncomfortable and Gobert's on weak side help, like he was with Favors. To all the conversation of what do we do about Morgan now, we start Mike Conley and let Mike Conley. We're going to win this series when the series started because we're going to have 3 pick and roll ball handlers, and Mike Conley was going to be one of them. I thought the Jazz made an adjustment on Jamal Murray and picked him up a little higher and heavier. Royce O'Neal did that for most of the game. When I went back through all the pick and rolls, the one thing I noticed on that was interesting to me on Murray were 2 things. One is he was coming left to right in game one. He went left to right on 14 of the pick and rolls. He scored on 8 of them. He scored on the last 7. When he went right to left, which was 11 of them, he only scored on 4 of 11. So he scored an 8 of 14 going left to right, 4 of 11 going right to left. That was the first thing I noticed. The second thing I noticed is that he was always coming with a head of speed into an area screen. In other words, he's moving at full steam. The defender's backpedaling. Jokic is just standing there. And Murray's coming off that late with all this power. When he was from a standstill, he wasn't as good. If you think about the old school John Stockton pick and roll where Stockton's sitting there and then Malone comes up and sets the pick and then they go to work. When the Jazz could stymie Murray's momentum enough so he's in a standstill to get into that pick and roll, and there were only about 4 of them. They didn't score on any of them. In fact, they turned it over on 2 of the 4. The Jazz had Murray much more in standstill pick and rolls yesterday than they did in the first game. And that's, I think it was because of the pressure they put on him. And I just thought Denver lacked juice, frankly. Like, early on in the ballgame, there's 2 plays very, very early in the game I thought were really important. And this was the Jazz just running plays early to find out what Denver was doing defensively and then nailing it. So the Jazz ran a guard-to-guard pick and roll. And the reason a guard-to-guard pick and roll is important is if you run a guard-to-guard pick and roll, your assumption is that they're going to switch. Or a small-to-small pick and roll, that they'll switch the defenders on it. And so the first one they ran, Craig kind of stays near Donovan. This is the first inkling of Denver's kind of defense where, and I don't think we'll see this again, where they're switching, but they're kind of hovering near Donovan, not really doubling or impacting him. Like, I think what you're going to see is either they're going to go back to doing it the other way where they just switch and then they kind of zone up on the backside, or you're going to see them really hit Donovan with a trap, which they weren't doing. So they run the guard to guard, and then Craig kind of stays near Donovan. Ingles flares out and hits a 3. It's just a huge play. Like, it's early in the game. Denver's making their first defensive adjustment. Jazz just recognize it right away. Ingles busts the 3. The next one down, Ingles comes over the sideline, and they double Ingles over on the sideline. He throws a beautiful pocket pass to a perfectly spaced Gobert who reacts absolutely perfectly right away on it. And then Gobert makes a play. I think he either gets to the rim and he's fouled or he makes a pass to someone. But those are the 2 plays early in the game. And they just showed how incredibly attuned to the situation and prepared the Jazz were. I thought that was really, really impressive. Michael Porter Jr. Okay, he had 28 points on 10 of 17 shooting. Could we please make him dribble? Like, if he catches the ball, get up on him. He wants one dribble to his left and he's going to shoot. Like, I'll pull every Michael Porter Jr. shot today if I need to. He wants one dribble to his left, so he's going to shoot. Or he's just going to shoot over. He's not a good isolation player. He's not a good one-on-one player. He doesn't have a post game. He's very incredibly, incredibly skilled. But he's also very, very incredibly limited. And we're letting him just have a field day. Like, this has got to go away. He is a dreadful defensive player. The minute he gets tired, he is as tall as any player just standing up that I've seen. Now, let me be clear on this. Michael Porter Jr. is, I'm not saying he's bad. Like, he's going to score 20 points a game in our league. Like, there's no doubt on me that he's going to do that. His shooting is incredible, 44%. He is a natural, bona fide scorer. But with a scouting report on him, he should not be doing what he's doing right now. I mean, I understand how truly great he is. He's 42% on catch and shoots. He's 46% if he gets that one bounce. But he's generally shooting 30% off the dribble this year. Isolation, he only had 10 chances all year. He doesn't like it. He only goes left. He went left 8 of his 10 isolations. On the pick and roll this year, he shot 3 for 18. 2 for 12 when he went off the pick. 0 for 4 when he was rejecting. His game is cutting off the ball and catch and shoot or one dribble and shoot. When he catches the ball, get into his body. He's only guarded 135 pick and rolls all year. So let's run that same three-play offensive sequence that I described fairly poorly earlier in the show, where we get the switch, and then we bring Gobert up. Run it with Porter Jr. He can't get off the pick. Let's see. Other notes. Great energy level early by the Jazz. Great Jordan Clarkson energy level, 46-42. We talked about that. Denver's defense is bad. Denver's shooting 50% on threes. Shot distribution was incredible in this game. Shot distribution was incredible. The Jazz took 14 mid-range non-restricted area twos, 4 long twos. Denver took 32. 13 long twos. They hit them. Denver hit 47% of their long twos, 60. They went 8 of 13 on long twos and 47% of their mid-range shots. They went just 7 of 13 at the rim. We went 17 of 22. Shot distribution in this game alone was worth a few points. Jazz were perfect in transition, and their half-court offense was through the roof. Denver is not very good in the half-court right now. They're scoring. Their offensive rating's like a 120. If you take it through three quarters, it was like a 114. It wasn't as, like, they scored a lot in that third quarter, so the numbers are a little skewed. So if you actually, according to the advanced box score of ESPN, if you just stop this game when the Jazz are ahead after three quarters, the Jazz offensive rating is a 155, which is insane, and the Denver's is a 115. That's not, 115's, you know, gives us a chance to win every single time. We'd like it to be about 110. But the Jazz are keeping Denver in the half court in a very good circumstance. However, Denver got their offensive rebounding game going and got out in transition a little bit. So if we can, you know, we got to get back on the defensive glass like we did in game one and then keep them off transition a tiny bit. And then the defense can actually have an impact on the game. Well, I think that's it. I hope you think that was adequate. All right, Friday's show coming to you tomorrow. We'll break down what to expect in the ballgame. We'll do a post-game Lockdown Live as well as we have been. I hope you've been enjoying those. And Friday and Sunday, we're coming at you. Games 3 and 4. Hopefully Mike Conley will be back. Talk to you soon. And oh yeah, remember my buddies over at Locked On Nuggets. Tell your smart device to listen to the podcast Locked On Nuggets.